Welcome to another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornBySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Here's Johnny.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
I had to pull that. I was looking up intros to Johnny, and I was like, man, nothing better than a little bit of what did we name the movie already? Why'd I forget it all of a sudden?
I don't know. Now. This is a great way to start.
This is live.
I know, that's right. What movie was that, though?
It was The Shining.
Thank you.
What are you
the
talking
Shining.
About? Oh.
The Shining.
You're talking
Here's
about that
Johnny.
Line.
This is why we start with jazz stuff and then do movies at the end.
Well, I'm not starting with movies. I'm just saying that's where I got my Here's Johnny stuff. All right, forget it. All right, John.
And where did he get that from? Ed McMahon.
Oh, there you go. That's right. And there you have it, folks. Ed McMahon, The Shining, and Johnny to start and kick us off.
I'm so glad we can teach the people.
Yes. Teach the people, and they keep coming.
So I was going through my Twitter timeline to make sure that I've never tweeted anything mean about Trey Burke, and I came out on top. I'm a winner. Trey can scour my timeline anytime.
I'm not sure Devin can do the same. He might have to go through his timeline and delete a few tweets.
I'd have to delete blog posts off the website.
Oh, you're one of those. Well, we might as well kick off this episode talking about Trey Burke. By now, everyone listening to this already knows what happened.
No, they don't. We have so many people listening that some of them might not know.
Yeah, that's true. All right. To the two of you that don't know, we'll tell you. Andy Larson, a very good friend of the show we had on a couple months back. If you haven't listened to that episode, go back and find it. Anyway, he tweeted out, what was it, a video? Was it a Vine or was it a video on YouTube?
It was a YouTube highlight video from Trey Burke's 2014-2015 season. And there was some explanation of a highlight video actually exists.
And if there was a hashtag sarcastic tweet of some sort, then that's where that would be entered, because it
would have been there.
It had that tone, right?
To me, it did. John, did you think it came across as sarcastic? The exclamation point, I think, is what did it for me.
I put myself in his shoes, and if you see the way he said it, then yeah, probably.
On the same token, I mean, okay, Andy's a stat geek. We know that. He reports for the Jazz for Salt City Hoops, so and again, he's a friend, and I'm not gonna drop him for it, but. The you know, what he said, did he mean it sarcastically? I could see Andy doing that. I could also see, I mean, Andy's been rough on Trey on the stats over the last year or so, and there's nothing wrong with that. Trey's stats don't back up very good. And so there's some truth to that. I don't have a problem with the way Andy said anything, honestly. You take it with a grain of salt. What do you think, John? I mean, was there an issue with the way it's said for you?
No, I just thought it was funny.
I think a lot of people thought it was funny.
Yeah, I mean, when you write about sports and cover sports, then, you know, you try to write in a way where you know the people you're writing about are going to read it. And I think they all do that anyway. I think Andy Larson's a good writer. I know Andrew Bailey chimed in. He's a good writer. It was just funny. It was just one of those things where Trey probably just looked up his name to see what's going on and saw that and was a little bugged by it. You know, it seems like as Jazz fans, we always got to have the one punching bag. So 2 years ago, it was Ty Corbin. Everything going wrong was just like, oh, if we could just get rid of Ty Corbin. And then last season, it was left. So then. Trey Burke kind of became the favorite person to criticize because he didn't show much improvement between year one and year two. And, you know, a lot of the future success of the Jazz depends on Trey improving. So, you know, what did he, I think he finished at 38%, 31 from three, something like that. They need more from him. And I've said, I think I tweeted this a few days ago, if he just gets his shooting up to 42 and 35, then that just opens so many doors and the Jazz will be that much better off.
Well,
and you know, they could have traded him, but they didn't. So, you know, they believe in him and they want to see what he can do in year three.
Well, and we said it last week, and it got Cameron from Utah Man podcast to say something about it. I think I said something about the fact that the Jazz have now 3-point guards that can't shoot the ball. So, I mean, it's a truth. It's a fact. You know, and I don't have a problem with the way Andy said it either. There's been some interesting things said over the last day or so. You know, let me make it clear. I don't think there was a problem with what Trey said back either. And you're probably right. He did a search on his name and probably came up with it. For that matter, he may even follow Andy, and keep an eye on what Andy says. Anyway, it doesn't bother me so much that Trey responded the way he did either. Is there anything wrong with what Andy said? In my opinion, no. But on the same token, you know, I mean, Jody made some comments about it too. I mean, Andy's in a different position, and this is something I want to make clear to a few people that said something about it since then too. A lot of folks went on the blogging community. Andy's more than just a blogger, and I think we need to solidify that. Andy might be the editor, managing editor of Salt City Hoops, but he writes for KSL. He's got access to the team and the Jazz. He might be a blogger, but I think he's more than a blogger, and he's learning.
He's got a radio show.
Yeah, he's got a radio show. He's in the spotlight as a member of the fan community, if you will, more than anyone else is. And was there anything wrong with what he said? No. Could it have been taken bad? Of course it could.
You know, I don't think this is about Andy personally. When I looked at it, I'm looking at it now, and Jeremiah Jensen, JJ Sportsbeat on Twitter, who I believe is with KSL also, yeah, sports anchor, he chimed in and said, "Is it a vine?" And I think I think that's where it got Trey's attention, because Andy made a comment, and yeah, there's a little bit to it, but to me, that's not enough for Trey to really be upset about it. But when someone comes out and says, "Is it a 6-second video?" and you're the local media, that's where the line got crossed a little bit for me. And if you want to do that, that's fine. It's going to get you some attention. You're going to be talked about like we're doing right now. But it just didn't sit well for me. I mean, let's be honest. It works for some guys. It works for Comedy Central, you know, what they did with the Colbert Report and the Daily Show. And it works on Pardon the Interruption and Wisecracks on Around the Horn. But when you get on Twitter, it just, I don't know, it seemed unprofessional to be, "Is it a vine?" Even though, let's be honest, we were all thinking it.
Yeah. And like I said, I want to make it very clear to our listeners, we are fans of all of the above. I happen to know Jeremiah fairly well as well. He's a friend. And so I'm not going to pick on him either. Andy's a friend. Love Trey Burke. I'm a Trey apologist. I love the guy. I want nothing but the best for him in a Jazz uniform too. So, but you're right. Any one of those things that have taken place over the course of the last 24 hours, I think we said it all. John,
I'm just watching it in the background while we're talking. It's a 9.5-minute video and it's pretty fun to watch.
Oh, I loved it.
Make all these plays and shots.
I loved watching it. I, you know, when I saw it, I thought that, oh, it's going to be the shot in New York and a couple other things. We're going to have like a 2-minute video here. And then I got watching it, and he's got some deep threes that he knocked down. He's got some great passes inside, wraparounds to Favors for the flush. You know, a lot of contested layups, you know, where it's almost like what you'd expect from Alec Burks. I loved watching the video. It makes me feel like maybe I've been judging Trey a little too harshly. But then I look at the stats for his shooting and I feel, you know, a little bit more justified. So it's the other half to the stats, I think.
Yeah, because he'll have like one out of four games where he shoots less than 25%. You're just like, ah, how does this keep happening? But he's got a lot of these mid-range floaters and a lot of penetration, and he can either dish it right there to Favors or he can go ahead and hit the layup. There's a lot of good stuff in here.
To me, it shows a lot of potential. You know, maybe we're meaning me and some other Jazz fans have been giving up on Trey a little early. You know, this season will tell, but that's kind of what it did for me when I actually watched it. I like you really enjoyed it.
And I will say I agree with what you're saying, Devin. I do think that fans have given up on him more than they probably should have. I think in a lot of ways we are harsher on him than we need to be. There are expectations there. But I think they're, you know, that highlight video is an example of some of the good things he has done. You're right, John. He's had those really just piss poor, horrible games. Just games that you just don't, they're the memorably bad games that make the stats look horrible. And then there's the games where, man, he carries the Jazz, it carries that second unit with 20 points, and the Jazz win the game because he's carrying the team. There's good and bad with Trey, and like I said, I can do nothing but cheer on and hope for the best for him, especially in a Jazz uniform. I'd like to see him successful, and I wouldn't have a problem with him earning his starting job back either if he was that successful. I want to see him improve, and I want nothing but the best for him.
Well, it's a sign of an off-season podcast if we're spending this much time talking about something that happened on Twitter. So yeah. Let's talk about something else. Summer League is over, so now we can talk about rookies. What did we learn about any of our rookies? We learned that Jazz aren't quite there yet, but, you know, it's way too early. But I was looking at Scott Howard Cooper of NBA.com. He does his rookie ladder every year. And it was interesting to see where he ranked some of the guys. Stanley Johnson of the Pistons, he has as his favorite right now. He had an amazing summer league.
Yeah, he did.
Did you get a chance to watch any of his games?
I saw bits and pieces, not a lot of it.
I watched two games and saw highlights of a bunch of others, but he was one early where I was just hoping if there was just some way he could somehow fall to us. But, you know, you can see why he went early. I mean, I was surprised he went ahead of Justice Winslow, and I still think Justice Winslow was ultimately going to have the better career, but man, Stanley Johnson is just showing it. And a lot of the other guys, a lot of the other lottery picks did really well. Emmanuel Mudiay, he has second. And now that Ty Lawson's a Rocket, then Mudiay suddenly has this whole team to himself. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with it.
If I remember correctly, Devin Booker actually had a decent summer league as well, didn't he?
He had some good shooting games, but I don't remember anything too overwhelming. And he didn't make Scott's top 10 list.
Where did Trey Lyles fit on the list? I take it he didn't make the top 10 either.
No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. Who else was on that top 10 list?
He had Jahlil Okafor third, Miles Turner fourth, the Pacers. Karl-Anthony Towns was fifth. Mario Hezonja from the Magic is sixth. D'Angelo Russell, seventh. Frank Kaminsky's eighth. Willie Cauley-Stein is ninth. And Kristaps Porzingis is tenth. Now, this is not just based on Summer League. This is based on things he saw in Summer League, but how he still predicts the rookies are going to be in their first year. So I think all of those guys are lottery picks. Yeah. But Stanley Johnson showed that he's really ready to, he really looks like he's ready to step in and contribute right away with the way he played.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had caught more Summer League than I did, but no, I agree with you. And a lot of those names that popped out there aren't big surprises. The games that I did see, a couple of those players looked particularly good. I can see why Karl-Anthony Towns went where he did. He's going to be something special. You know, watching him in a couple of summer league games, guy's got a nice NBA body and he plays really well. I mean, he's extremely talented.
Yep.
So, all right. You mentioned in there in the rookie talk, you mentioned about a player that changed scenery and location once he decides to get out of rehab.
Ty Lawson is a rocket.
And we suddenly hear the mountains in Denver, Colorado, singing joyously everywhere.
Yeah, I actually like that trade for both teams. Denver needed to get rid of Ty Lawson. Ty Lawson torpedoed his value. Denver was thinking of waiving him, but to still get some pieces back, and including a first-round pick, I think that's great for them. I think, you know, since they didn't trade him in February, that they got to be happy that they were still able to get something for him. They got Kostas Papanikolaou and some other pieces thrown in there. But, you know, I think it's, I'm happy for them that they were upgraded point guard with the Rockets. And if he can just, you know, get his personal life together, he's an upgraded point guard for that team. So then you have Patrick Beverley be the backup point guard. And the Rockets have solidified their talent. So this is a team that needed to make sure they stayed strong. They went to the conference finals, but you had the Spurs get better. Golden State's just been amazing. So the Rockets couldn't just be content. And so they got Ty Lawson and didn't have to give up that much, I think was great for them as well. And you just have to hope that Ty Lawson doesn't squander this opportunity.
So sorry, Devin, go ahead.
He will.
Yeah. Well, and
he'll
squander it. Yeah. Yeah. And
it could be another Rondo and Dallas situation, but I hope that doesn't happen.
Well, and that brings to mind that actually fits well with my question. So I had a conversation with somebody the other day who, and it's only one person I've had this conversation with, but I want to hear you guys' take on it and see if it fits in with the way I felt about it. But somebody said to me, you know, if the Jazz had the opportunity to trade and bring in Ty Lawson in a trade, why wouldn't you do that? And I mean, why wouldn't you want to do that? I think part of that might be the locker room, but John, why wouldn't Jazz fans want Ty Lawson on their team?
Because you want to keep developing Dante Exum. Because Lawson would be damaging to that locker room, because you're locking up money for two more years. Because I read what Denver people say and they can't wait to get rid of him. So why would I want to take someone that his home team can't wait to get rid of? There was plenty of reasons why I wouldn't want Ty Lawson to come to the Jazz.
Because I want to be safe driving on the roads. That's right. I went there.
Yeah. Winner. No. And John, to an excellent point you just said, the Denver fans point. Denver fans have been clamoring to get rid of Lawson for 2 years now. 2 years they've wanted to get rid of him. Now, some of that I take with a grain of salt, because some of those same folks have been wanting to get rid of player after player after player for the last 5 years. But there is something to be said when you've got a fan base clamoring for a guy to be moved. A very good friend of ours, Brooke, you know Brooke, is one of those that's been extremely vocal the last couple of weeks about Ty Lawson. You know who I'm talking about, right, John?
Yeah.
She's been extremely vocal about it, and she's got a lot of folks that she's talked to about it as well, and I've watched those conversations, and you know what? I even talked to her about it. You know what? If they want to get rid of Ty Lawson, there is something definitely to be said about why you don't want him on your team. You make excellent points about why he may work for the Rockets, but I wonder if some of the problems that exist really are the reasons why he won't work for the Rockets.
Well, they took on Josh Smith last year, and that worked.
Yeah, that's true.
And they seem to have built a culture where they could absorb that and get a guy to do what he can. The Jazz is a young team, and they're doing a really good job in making sure that we have quality guys in the locker room. You know, our team. I mean, top to bottom last year, just listening to all their exit interviews and everything, I was like, this is just like the most likable team I think they've ever had. Just everyone is just a good guy. And, you know, the one that they were having the most problems with, so they shipped him out. And they're not going to, you know, as they're a young team trying to move forward, I don't think they're going to take a chance on guys who might have talent but are bad in the locker room. Well, and I think that's great for team cohesion.
So do I. And I think they're back, you know, to the point in Houston where with Josh Smith, I might say that a large part of why Josh Smith worked and why Ty Lawson may have a chance goes to a, you know, former Hall of Fame player who's now their coach, Kevin McHale. I think that might have something to do with it. I think Kevin McHale is able to temper a few of those you know, attitudes within the locker room and make it work. I don't know if he can continue to do so, but he got that cohesion from Josh Smith, and you would assume he could probably do the same thing with Ty Lawson.
Well, Josh Smith, you know, he's kind of an odd player, but if he's on a lottery team, he's just going to try to get his numbers. But he also seems self-aware enough that he gets a chance in a winning situation where he knows he's not the best player on the team, where you have James Harden and Dwight Howard right there, when you have a Hall of Famer like Kevin McHale there on the sidelines. You know, he knew he was getting his chance to start over and to actually be part of something, and he wasn't going to squander it. But on the other end, you look at when Rajon Rondo went to the Mavericks, and he just kept his bad attitude, and he tried to say it's me or the coach, which is just ridiculous, and so that all fell apart. So with Ty Lawson going to the Rockets, you got to figure, is it going to be closer to the Josh Smith thing, or is it going to be closer to the Rondo thing? And I don't really know. You know, I read what other people write, but I don't really feel like I have that great of a sense of what Ty Lawson's like. I would simply hope that he will take this opportunity to straighten his life up, recognize that he's been given a gift to go to the Rockets, who are top three in the West, you know, and that he makes the most of it and doesn't squander it.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Devin's still shaking his head. He's got the realist attitude where he doesn't believe Ty Lawson will ever put it together.
And if he gets a third DUI in November, then Rockets will just like, fine, wave him.
Yeah. We'll eat the remainder of his contract just to get him away from here. And so, okay. What's up next?
Gosh, I'm trying to think if anything else has really happened this week. Richard Jefferson. Did you see that?
I did not.
This isn't that big a news. Richard Jefferson was going to re-sign with the Mavs, but he backed out, and he's going to the Cavaliers.
So, poor Mark.
Good for you, R. Jeff. Go chase your ring.
Poor Mark Cuban.
Oh, you know. Okay. Dallas will somehow recover from Richard Jefferson not rejoining the team.
I'll do it. Mark, if you're listening, call me. I would be happy to suit up for the Mavs this season.
Mavs are taking applications at this point in time for anybody who is willing not to renege on any sort of word of mouth conversation that they've had already. DeAndre Jordan, we're looking at you.
You have my word, unless a better offer comes along.
We need to go on the, what's that show that, is it Shark Tank? We need to go on Shark Tank and tell Mark Cuban, hey, we have a great business proposal for you. We're not entrepreneurs. We just want you to pay us to be bench warmers on the team. All right, that one died. Here, crickets.
Well, Alan killed it. I think that's going to be a good move for Richard Jefferson. I think he brings something to Cleveland that they need, you know, a little bit of veteran experience, just an all-around team player. I loved him when he was with the Jazz. I really liked having him on the team.
Yeah, he was a good guy. I was frustrated that he started almost the entire season because I thought that the younger guys needed more playing time, and it was a nail in the coffin for Ty. But that wasn't Richard's fault, and he made the most of his opportunity, and he was always a good locker room guy. It was a good interview. I enjoyed him on the team. I just think the situation with him starting almost the whole season until Ty gave up at the end, didn't help. But he is a good teammate, and he's a good guy to have on your roster, even if his age is where he can't do much on the court for you. But in all other aspects, you know, he's a good guy, and I don't blame any veteran 35 and over who tries to join the favorite to win the championship next year. More power to you. Go try to get your ring.
Okay, that does spark a conversation. So who is, here we go, July, late July predictions for the championship, and we're not even there yet. Who does win the championship? Is Cleveland the favorite? You have three teams, I think, that in my mind are the cream of the crop. Spurs, Golden State, and Cleveland. Who wins it, John? Again, Alan kills the podcast.
I'll go Spurs.
Spurs. Devin?
I'm going to say Cavs.
And I'm going to say Cavs. I said if the Cavs didn't do it this year, I think that LeBron would do it next year, because I don't think you'd deny him like that. So I said Cavs. That was before the Spurs made all these moves, but I still think the Cavs have it.
Yeah, I think the Cavs will be in the finals again, and I think the only way they don't win is if we go into year two of LeBron just completely disrespecting David Blatt at every turn.
And you can't have, I mean, do you realize too, if the Cavs go to the finals and play the Spurs, if the Cavs lose, that's the one team LeBron could never beat. Well, he beat once, one out of four times.
Well, he beat him, so that's all I'd worry about. He beat him.
But he lost three out of four championships to the Spurs. Three out of four. If he loses this next year, three out of four. So
he lost three?
Yeah, he lost that one in 07. He lost.
Oh, yeah, the first Cavs one.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then he beat them the 1 year, 3 years ago, and then he lost to them. No, 3 years ago. Yeah. And then 2 years ago, lost to them. So, yeah.
Here, I was just looking because I knew I saw something. I'm looking at, what is this, International Business Times or something like that. And it's got the odds for 2016 to win the NBA title. Cleveland Cavaliers, 11-4. Number two would be San Antonio Spurs, 3-1. Number three, Golden State Warriors, 5-1. Number four, I'm a little bit surprised. It has Oklahoma City Thunder, 17-2. And then we get into, like, Los Angeles.
The sound kind of went out on me.
Oh, say it again. Sorry, I probably covered it. Run those numbers
it
again.
It got really digitally.
Yeah, run those again.
We've got Cleveland Cavaliers, 11-4. San Antonio Spurs, 3-1. Golden State, 5-1. OKC, 17-2. And then we get to Los Angeles Clippers, Chicago Bulls, Miami Heat, and then Houston Rockets. Houston's down the list a little ways. And if you're wondering where the Jazz are, they're down there at 100-1. So
there you go.
Go out and put 10 bucks on it, and you just waste the 10 bucks.
And sorry, you were talking numbers on chances to win, and I was too busy noticing that the paid intern on Jedi and Germs was having a conversation with my wife about farmersonly.com.
Really, Alan?
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll have to talk to him.
Yeah, we need to have a talk with that paid intern. Tell him to knock it off. FarmersOnly.com.
Unpaid.
There's a reason he's unpaid.
Yeah.
You don't have to be lonely.
And
neither does Alan's wife.
And there you have it. And we've brought in FarmersOnly.com. The only thing left we have to bring in is Ashley Madison.
You know, let's talk about that.
Yeah, I can't wait. I can't wait for that thing to come out. Let's blow this thing up. I know I'm not on it, so sweet. Let's see all these people. I mean, 37 million users. You figure there's 37 million users. And I looked up the stats. There's only about 60 million married couples in the U.S. So that's like if every marriage had one spouse who signed up, you'd still have a few million marriages where they both did. That's just amazing to me that they would have that many.
And pretty soon you're going to have a bunch of very not happy people with images floating across the internet.
Well, you know what it is.
I think we'll find out that there are a lot more open marriages than we thought.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It's probably a lot of single people thinking that they can meet their next love interest. And, you know, this person's not that committed.
Next up on the list, cougar.com is going to blow up.
Yeah.
Wait, are we talking about Cougar Board?
No, way to bring Cougar Board into it. Hey, Devin, you're out. You're outnumbered here 2-1. All right, don't go there. Don't bring BYU into this.
Well, I'm getting the feeling we should wrap this up so you can go save your marriage.
Yeah, I've got to go put on my boots and cowboy hat and go home and be a farmer.
Yeah. Find some hay to put between your teeth.
Okay, this episode has gotten really weird really quick.
Welcome to July.
Yes, welcome to July and the nothing to talk about month. All right, so before we go, any movies you've seen since last week?
I saw Trainwreck with LeBron James.
And how was LeBron James' debut career as an actor?
He was good. He was good. He was funny. He was, you know, a little stiff when athletes try to be actors, but I thought he did pretty good overall. I laughed a few times at stuff he did. Script had some good stuff for him to do. It had him hanging out in New York the whole time for some reason. And Trainwreck was also filmed at a time when Mike Woodson was still the coach because he was there on the sidelines. But, you know, he was good. I thought the movie was funny. It was typical Judd Apatow type humor.
Amy Schumer.
I liked her. She wrote it, so, you know, naturally she had a lot of good one-liners for herself, but I thought she was pretty generous with the whole cast and giving them stuff to do. So I liked it. And then I also saw Terminator Genesis, and I was, it was about what I thought it was going to be because the marketing gave everything away. So I can't say my expectations were too high, but it still kind of, it wound up being disappointingly about what I thought it would be.
I've heard the
same. So I'm okay not having any more Terminator movies. They kind of leave it open. If you sit through 45 seconds of the credits, it has this little shot that says, hey, we're open for a sequel. But,
right,
you know, they don't really need to. And Jai Courtney played Kyle Reese, and he's not an actor I enjoy that much. He's one of the jerks in the Divergent series. I can't remember his character's name. I think it's Eric. He was also Bruce Willis's son in the worst Die Hard of them all, the one where they were in Russia. So him as Kyle Reese, I thought, just didn't really work.
No, well, there you go. And we're not short of being able to go on some shameless plugs here. Where do you? You write reviews, John, on these movies. I do too. I have places I write, but John, why don't we take a minute and tell the folks where they can find where you review?
My movie reviews are at flickbait.com. That's with an F, flickbait.com. My political stuff's at utahpoliticohub.com. And then, of course, tornbysports.com.
There you go. And Flickbait, folks, go check it out. A very good friend of ours, Josh and John, they got something good going on over there. So check it out. John just put out something today, as a matter of fact. Right, John? About the current standings in the box office. And I believe...
I do that every weekend. And, you know, movies as I see them. I don't think I have... Yeah, I still got to finish my Trainwreck review and get that put up.
There you go. Watch for it, guys. You can find John's reviews there. And John's very good and very, very big into politics, as many of you may know. So... Well, that should wrap it up. Anything else you want to add to Mr. Producer Devin?
Nope.
All right. Thanks everybody for joining us for another edition of Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. We can be found on Twitter at Jedi and Germs, at Germs Guy, at Jedi Zog, and at Torn by Devin. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher, Jedi and Germs on the Jazz. And, of course, our home, tornbysports.com, where you can find all your wonderful local coverage from BYU to Utah to the Utah Jazz, RSL. You got it. You can find it there all in one place. We want to thank you all for listening, and please send us your feedback, your questions. We're willing to talk about them on air. As always, John, take us out.
Skip, fly, Fandango.
Yeah.